this virtual open house this evening. My name is Jonalisa Tekleach. I'm the Community Affairs Manager for Eden Renewables, joined by my colleagues, our Chief Development Officer, Giovanni Maruca, Director of Project Development, Gillian Black, who you will be hearing from shortly, and coordinator for this project, Jennifer Galavati, who will be helping out with the presentation. But before I pass it on over to Gillian, I wanted to cover a few housekeeping items. First, as you can see in the upper left-hand corner of your screen, we are recording this webinar. You will be able to access this recording on our website starting tomorrow. Second, we want this webinar to be more of a discussion and less of a presentation. So we do encourage questions and comments throughout this event. To ask your question or make a comment, just click on the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen. I will call out your name and unmute you so you can speak. We do ask that you please be mindful of others who may want a turn and keep your questions and comments brief. And third, and most importantly, we value your feedback. So please take a moment to complete the feedback form after the webinar. This will pop up in your browser as soon as you log out of the Zoom. But if for some reason it doesn't, or you don't have to do it tonight, you will receive an email to a link, with a link to it tomorrow. If you want a copy of this evening's presentation or would like access to the recording, you can indicate it in this form as well. Without further delay, let me pass it on over to Gillian, who will talk about the Greendale Community Solar Project and the benefits it will bring to your towns. Take it away, Gillian. Gillian, you gotta unmute yourself.
I'm better at solar than I am computers. Want to thank everyone for joining us tonight and send a special thank you out to the South Skodak Fire Department, who are having a drill night tonight, so I understand they're joining us. Welcome, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so we're here to talk about the Greendale Solar Community Solar Project in Kinderhook and Skodak, and we're going to go through the presentation. I'll hit most of the items. Let's, as JL said, please put your Q&A up there or your questions up there, and we'll try to hit them later. We'll definitely hit them later. All right, Jen. So Eden Renewables is a solar developer in Troy, New York. We're based here in the States in New York in Troy. We have offices in the UK as well as Sub-Saharan Africa. Over in the UK, we focus on a bit larger scale project. We've been operating there for about 8 to 10 years, formerly as Solstice Renewables. We came to New York State about three and a half years ago. And we're focused on community solar farms, where we build the solar farm in a field and manage it for biodiversity and provide electrical billing credits to subscribers. Our projects are roughly an hour to an hour and a half outside of Albany, so pretty square in the capital region. We've got 20 projects in development, and we have 10 of them approved. This project is one of those 20 that we're moving forward through the process with both the towns of Kinderhook and Skodak. This is our team. Everyone here is living in New York locally, Albany area, except for Harry Lopez, who splits his time between the UK and Albany, although not during COVID, so we haven't seen him for a while, at least not in person. But this is our team. What you're here for tonight is community engagement. When we start developing a project, we want to reach out to local area residents and businesses to understand how they feel about the project, to introduce ourselves as a company, to introduce the project specifically, and to take questions and try to help people understand what it is we're doing. We sent out marketing, we do online marketing, and everyone probably received a mailer. We typically do the open houses in person, but obviously now with the COVID, we're doing it remotely. So happy to see we've got everyone here. We'll be here for questions during this session. And then afterwards, if anyone has questions they want to follow up, our team is open and always willing to engage with folks. So what is community solar? Essentially, we're building one solar farm in a field and we're planting a meter there. It'll be a national grid meter, and all of the electricity that is produced inside of the solar farm runs through that meter, and every kilowatt hour turns into dollars and cents. That account, that meter, has an account with which it's associated, and all those kilowatt hours, all those dollars and cents go in there, and then we're able to divvy it up and send it out to subscribers of the solar farm. So one farm, it goes in there. We work with people to understand where those billing credits need to go, how much they need. You get a line item on your national grid bill that subtracts your share from your bill. So it's a discounted line item. And for that, you pay the solar farm 90 cents on the dollar. So the solar farm creates the electricity, sends it directly to the national grid three-phase lines. And then through National Grid's accounting software, they attribute the shares to all of the subscribers. And the net savings is 10% for each subscriber, regardless of how much electricity they use or how little they use. I'll get into some of the local and environmental benefits in just a bit, but we try to do more than just generate clean electricity and offer discounts to the host communities and beyond. We try to manage these sites for biodiversity. We include educational programming and just to be a good neighbor, essentially. So this is the project location. It's in the very southern area of Rensselaer County and the town of Skodak. And actually the county line and the town line crosses east-west through the lower portion of the property. We chose this site because it's near to the 13-2 three-phase distribution line, and we can connect to it rather easily. The site offers good natural screening. It's fairly well tucked away, so we're not changing the character of the area, and we don't have to put as many screening trees in or consider building up berms or what have you. The land long ago was, you know, there were cows out there, and right now it's been sitting fallow. You know, it could be used for hay or something, but we typically try to take land that's not of extremely high agricultural value or development value and use them to site our systems. Excuse me. As I mentioned, we will manage the site for biodiversity, and one of the key components there is sowing the entire 35-acre solar farm with wildflowers so that we can promote pollinator health. And the access is right off of 32, County Route 32, so 9 to 32, and then there's an existing farm track that cuts up into the project that we will improve for our site access. Here's a close-up of the site design. The green represents the property boundary. You'll see up towards the top right corner, there's a National Grid utility corridor bisecting the property. We are not connecting to those lines. Those are transmission lines. And in order to connect to those, you need a much larger project. We're connecting down on Route 32, where you can see utility interconnection and site access. There's a 13-2 distribution feeder that cuts right up into the property and actually has an existing pole that we're able to connect to. The red inside of the main green area represents a 200-foot setback from the property line, and that is the town of Skodak requirement for our setback from adjacent property. The orange line cutting left to right on somewhat of an angle, that's actually the town and county line that bisects the property. The blue is the array. Those are the solar modules, and they actually run north and south. We use a single axis tracker, so the modules rotate on this torque tube fulcrum, and they set to the east in the morning to pick up the sunlight, and they track with the sun over throughout the day and go to the west, and then they reset to the east in the morning. So those guys are in there. You see the access road, site access, it kind of squiggles up to a lay down area and a potential area for additional modules. And the power electronics, the transformer and battery station are right there at the end of that access road. And that is, as I mentioned, an existing farm track that will be improved for fire access, for our trucks to get in there and build the project. In the middle, you can see there's a blank green spot that's kind of running north-south. That's there's a riverine and some wetlands that we've tried to avoid there. Cool. This image shows that same solar array now with a little bit more detail, and we're showing you some information about the biodiverse solar farm that we're planning to build. And this is similar to all of our sites in New York and the UK that we build. We look at it and we say, what can we do with this site beyond just creating green, clean electricity? So we've got the site. In between each of those solar rows, there's roughly 15 to 17 feet of open area. So it's a great area to put the pollinator-friendly seed mix. We do sheep grazing. We host beekeepers. And this is all within or just outside the perimeter fencing. Some other items to note here. Below the perimeter fence, you can see additional screening. So throughout the planning process, we've gone through and done visual analyses to understand receptor points and from what points might this project be visible. And then we can plan where our plantings will be. So that additional screening actually picks out an area that we need to buffer to add additional foliage to. And we've selected white pines because they're indigenous to this area. And that actually fits into our biodiversity management plans as a whole, where we're looking at birds and bees and butterflies and all sorts of mammals and reptiles and the trees and such, and determining what we can do to make this site even better, right? So I have bat and bird boxes, the sheeps I mentioned, the wildflowers, the bees. Because this is will be such a biodiverse site, and we've got this great solar farm creating renewable energy, it provides educational benefits for our host communities. So in this case, it would be Ichabod Crane School District. We work with Skodak School District for some of our other projects, and we plan, develop, and implement an educational program with the local school district where we integrate some solar curriculum into their, you know, various grade levels, and we run school field trips out to the site at our own cost, no cost to the district. And then I guess I'll get into it. I'm getting ahead of myself. We've got another slide on that. This site also has been designed for energy storage. There used to be an incentive with NYSERDA, and hopefully that'll come up again. But we always design all of our projects so that we can store the electricity and inject it into the grid when it's needed the most. So a little more detail on the biodiversity. Whenever we put those screening trees in, we take the opportunity to plant indigenous trees. So trees and hedges, bird and bat boxes, the livestock grazing refers to the sheep in there. And that's typically done in a mob grazing scheme where the sheep herder will come in and isolate the sheep in specific areas within our perimeter fence and set up temporary electrical fencing and let the sheep mob graze, really eat in one location and then move them over to other locations. So we'll typically go in and we'll take a first cut with a brush hog inside of the fence. Once the wildflowers have gone to seed, and then the sheep come in and they're there through the fall, weather permitting. Now, the biodiversity plans are great, but they take management. So we'll go in and we'll do a year one study to understand what's there and what we want to accomplish. And we'll set up our pollinator scorecard and we'll understand what our goals are and we'll put the plan together. And then over the life of the system, say 25 years for the biodiversity management, we go out there and we tweak it as required. We collect data and report and manage. So again, even more educational opportunities there as these project sites mature and we're able to get more data from them. Pollinator-friendly habitats are extremely important. We're losing our bees in vast numbers, and so what we're doing here is to give them a food source and actually bringing in beekeepers. So we have pollinator services that we can provide to area agriculture. Apparently the bees will fly out 3.5 to 5 miles radius from the site itself, so they'll help pollinate the area around them. And it's just critical to the New York agricultural industry. So, education, I talked a little bit about that already, but so far we've had about 7,800 school kids visit our sites as of 19. And we also offer a STEM scholarship, $1,000 for each project per year to a graduating senior in the STEM or STEAM interest areas. And that'll be ongoing for the life of the project for the good 25 years there. So solar itself, obviously the sun is gonna keep shining. It's free, renewable, and abundant. The sun shines, it hits the solar modules, they create electricity, it's sent to the grid, and we can use it. And those electrons go wherever they're needed along the utility infrastructure. It's affordable. There's no feedstock to worry about. We're not buying coal. We're not fracking. There's no nuclear material to deal with. And we're actually finding that it's quickly becoming at par with other generation costs. We're reducing air pollution because we're not putting any of these noxious chemicals into the air, and we're cutting carbon emissions. So each one of our projects is 7.5 megawatts DC, about 5 megawatts AC, and with the electricity and the billing credits that we're generating, we can offset about 1,200 homes. And as you can see, the equivalent of planting 10,000 trees annually, 310,000 pounds of carbon dioxide per year. So it's a really significant offset for each of these projects that we put in the ground. For the consumer, we're offering 10% savings on the electricity bills. And if you look at the total generation at 10% savings, we're saving about $158,000 per year for each of these projects. We try to give priority to host communities. So when we interact like this with residents of Kinderhook and Skodak, we're offering first dibs on the subscription slots, essentially. And we're able to, in some cases, focus on LMI households to try to maximize the benefit of the savings. So if you feel like supporting us, we would invite you to reach out to the planning boards in either of your towns. There will be a public hearing, there will be two. There'll be a Kinderhook public hearing and a Skodak public hearing. It's always nice to have letters of support or phone calls in there for that. We're hoping if you take issue with anything, we can discuss it now or by email or phone after that. So with that, I'll hand it back to JL.
Great, thanks, Gillian. At this point, we'll be taking questions and any comments. Again, if you have any questions or comments, just click on the raise hand button right at the bottom of your screen. I'll unmute you and you can ask your question or make your comment. Dan Quarta, I'm gonna allow you to talk, go ahead. You'll have to unmute yourself.
Muted, Dan.
All right. Am I there now?
Yes, yep. Sir.
Okay, you mentioned a 25-year lifespan on a project. What happens after 25 years?
That's a great question, Dan. So the project will actually run for 40 years. The 25 years is what we're looking at for our education program and the biodiversity management program. It's a little hard to contract out for all this work and consider how we're going to run it for beyond 25 years. So we typically take 25, that's typical finance time period. But the project will run for 40. The modules will go to 80% of their production value by year, say 25 or 30. Sometimes the modules will be repowered. We'll pull the modules, and who knows what kind of technology we'll have in the future. It could just be a much higher wattage module, and it may be financially worth swapping them out. But if nothing were to happen and the project were to stop operating, we have a decommissioning bond or irrevocable letter of credit that would fund the decommissioning of the project. So they're relatively easy to decommission, and much of the material is recyclable. So the whole solar farm would be taken down, and the land would be reverted back to what it looked like beforehand. And in fact, a little bit better, because there haven't been any herbicides or fertilizers used. The land, the topsoil, will have regenerated. But it may make a lot of sense to just keep running it as a renewable energy project, because we have this critical connection to the national grid lines, which I didn't mention. Sorry, Dan, I'll pause. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And then my other question is, and I'm not trying to be funny, but we saw what happened in Texas with the frost, and they never get snow. We get snow here all the time.
Yeah, you know what? So,
you know what I mean?
I'm going to let Giovanni dig into that, but first I'll say that, believe it or not, Germany is the strongest solar market in the world, and we in New York State, upstate New York, we have better sunlight than they do, and so it's really about the cost structure to develop the projects, the incentives, and truly the will behind the state, right? So these are on trackers, so they move. It's only about 1 degree every 8 minutes, but they can go into a storm stow mode. And so if there's a snowstorm coming, they can move and shed the snow more easily. And we're actually, well, I'll let Gio jump in on the distributed generation if he's up for it.
Well, look, the main point is that in places like New York State, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Maine, Massachusetts, where there is a considerable amount of penetration for solar farms and wind turbines, those locations, in order to get your funding for these projects, you have to demonstrate that you're using the right technology to weatherize these projects so they continue to operate. And the biggest risk for solar farms is actually the snow load on the panels. So what's interesting about the modules we're using and the technology we're using is they are they move. So when they sense and get too much snow load, they go into a more vertical position that allows for the snow to slide off. I've also seen projects in Minnesota where they slide, and they also have, this was a large scale project, it was a 100 megawatt project called the North Star project, and those, they have a little bit of technology that actually kind of vibrates the panels a little bit to help move the snow a bit more, because they tend to get longer freezing periods than we tend to do in this region. Right. So I think the major difference is in Texas, they never invested in the weatherization of all of their generation technology, whether it was wind, solar, gas, or coal plants. They just haven't made those investments because they didn't think it was necessary. Kind of like, when it snows in Washington, D.C., nobody has a plow because it's so rare, they didn't make the capital investment to, buy plow trucks and salters. But here in upstate New York and, the northern region of America and northern Europe, where there's significant generation for these projects, you just weatherize, and they're really reliant. So I think it's unlikely to see those same kind of problems. We've got a little stricter regulations in terms of our grid resiliency when we deal with national with the utilities, because they're part of the New York State ISO, and then they also have interconnections. We have interconnections with New England ISO and PJM, so we have a lot more resiliency redundancies built in the system here, and the weatherization will be the main reason. Our biggest risk in upstate New York, and everyone will know this, is when winter storms and summer storms come and the power and trees fall on the power lines, that's our biggest risk to having knocking out the power. So I think we're in a little better place, a little better management than our friends down in Texas.
I wasn't trying to be funny. It was just, you know.
No, I agree. It's a good question.
I get it. Tree falls on a wire, you ain't getting power.
Yeah.
That's right.
So.
Great.
But, yeah, that's.
Sorry,
I'm good. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for your question. Let's go ahead and take another question from Suzanne Pollard. I'm going to let you talk. You may need to unmute yourself.
Hi. Yes, I'm Suzanne Pollard. I'm currently getting my supply from another provider of solar. And I've found that it's, you know, I enjoy the 10% discount. A couple of things have happened. The sufficient amount of solar tends to fluctuate in the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that as a situation that you'll be facing as well? And when the supply is insufficient, I am then billed by National Grid to pick up the difference. Is that how you see this happening?
There's certainly going to be seasonal fluctuation. The bulk of the electricity produced by the solar farm will be in the summer. When we add batteries to our system, we can flatten that curve a bit during the day as well as during the year. Also, by using single axis trackers, we're increasing the production potential for the project, so we can squeeze a little bit more out. But there will be some seasonal variation. I don't know if
I was going to say, isn't it the case that the whole idea of the net metering is that, you know, during the summer months you're building up credits, so you should be getting more credits during those months that offset during the leaner months in the winter. And yeah, normally there should be a reconciliation at the end of the year, because generally what happens is when you contract for your credits, the company you're working with should be providing you an estimate of what your demand is likely to be based on your previous year. And during the months where we're creating more generation and more credits, we should be able to roll those over from month to month to account for the leaner months. And then at the end of the year, there should be like a reconciliation to see how close the estimate was. And if you purchased too many credits, they should be able to roll over into the following year. And if you've purchased too few credits, then you might have to make up a cost difference there. But I that's the way we understand it to operate. Now, I do think there may be some differences related to the age of the project. So in terms of how new the project was, because there were a little bit different rules when they were 2 megawatt solar farms, and it wasn't the VDR method, it was the straight net metering. So I know there were a little bit different rules depending on when the solar park was commissioned. But I think the general principle is that you're supposed to be able to account for all of your credits throughout the year and be able to offset when you have extra credits in the summer versus the lower credits due to the lower generation in the winter.
Could I ask one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
When are you thinking that you're going to be available to provide the resource? Is this is a planning stage, final stage? What are we looking at in terms of time frame to sign up?
Yeah, this is in the planning process right now. So it's possible by the end of this year, but more likely it would be a 2022 project build and come online. We have maybe 10 to 12 other projects in the area that are going into construction late spring of this year, for which we're taking reservations. We're not actively marketing subscriptions, but if you go to our website, you can see some of the other projects that would be available to subscribe to that would come online a little sooner than this particular project. But you know, one of the benefits is that once you're in a network, you don't necessarily have to buy from one solar project, right? You could be getting it from another one. So.
Thanks. Thank you, Susan. Okay. We did get some typed questions. One from Ryan Carbonera. He asked, will we be able to use you as a supplier? Ryan, did you want to elaborate on that? I'm going to allow you to talk. You may have to unmute yourself. Do you want to answer that?
Sure. Why don't I just start addressing that? So we're not a supplier. We're not an ESCO. We're not actually supplying the commodity, the electrical unit, right? We are supplying billing credits that are subtracted from the bills by National Grid. So you can't use us as a supplier. You'll still get your electricity from National Grid.
Great.
I just think it's worth explaining that because we're in a funny zone here. That if you are a National Grid utility customer, you'd be eligible to for this project because I know NYSEG is not too far away. So this is just for National Grid, because we're connecting in with National Grid and creating the credits with National Grid. So if you have if National Grid is your utility. Whether you're buying the electricity, the power from them, or from an ESCO, you'd be eligible for the credits here.
Okay. Another question, type question is, can you talk about the installation from Judy Anderson?
Sure. And I see Randy asks how many megawatts, 7.5 megawatts DC, 5 megawatts AC. As far as construction goes, or installation, Judy, we pound the posts into the ground. They're W6x9 I-beam posts, and then the structure of the tracker is affixed to the posts, and then the solar modules are racked on top of those, and they're run by motors. At the very first. When construction first begins, they'll do the earthworks, creating the road. Everything is fenced in. The inverter pads, all of the power electronics inside on the right side of over there on the array, they actually sit on board pads with footings. So construction takes about 3 to 4 months, and it's a bit noisy in the beginning when they're pounding the posts, and then it's really rather quiet from there on.
Great. Let's take one more typed question, and then I'm going to take another vocal question. Will Eden be the long-term operator, or is this their role to set up, or is their role to set up for a third party?
Do you want me to handle that, Gillian?
Sure. Go for it.
Sure. So it's a very good question. So our business model is that we are the owner at the moment. We are the majority owner. When we go to do construction financing, it's very likely that the project will transfer to a new owner where we'll be a minority owner. That'll get through the construction and initial operation of the project. And then like most of these solar farms, there'll probably be some sort of yield compression, and where the asset will be acquired by Wall Street effectively. They end up getting the majority of these renewable projects end up being owned by hedge funds, retirement funds, infrastructure funds, pure renewable investment funds. and they're very attractive to those investors because although solar is somewhat intermittent, it's very predictable over a year and 25 years. So the revenue that comes off of these projects is very low maintenance costs and very, very predictable, which helps offset the investment community's more riskier bets or investments that they take. So they like these stable particularly solar projects, because they're very stable and they just keep turning over the very predictable returns. So that's generally the business model for, I would guess to say, probably 90% of the marketplace. You'll find that solar farms and wind farms end up being owned by institutional investors.
But Steve, just to echo that we maintain a minority position in every project we develop, and we maintain contracts with the project to deliver on all the biodiversity management and the educational programming.
I'm gonna take again, if you have any questions, please raise your hand, or you can put it in the Q&A chat box. I'm gonna allow you to tap in. You may need to unmute yourself.
Hi. Another question I have is I live in that area.
Yep.
Are you the same company that has the farm that's on Route 9, not far away from there?
No, that's East Light Partners, built by CS Energy, down the road, south on 9.
Yeah. When you go underneath the railroad trestle there, going south on 9, it's on the right.
Yeah. No, that's a different project. Now those you'll notice are those modules are facing due south. That's a fixed tilt system. Just to kind of put that in mind. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was just curious because I know some people around here. I've seen solar farms before just because I do road service for with my job, but I don't know if any people have actually seen what they look like. Mm-hmm. So I figured they drive by and see that versus what you got.
Sure. It'll be a little bit different. I'm not sure what their screening is going to look like over there, but they seem to be nearly complete.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I don't see much stuff going in and out of there, but
yeah, they're pretty busy for a while there. But it happens pretty quickly. I mean, construction is just about three to 4 months, weather depending.
Well, yeah, it's just a matter of what you got to bring to the site.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. Thanks.
We'll take another typed question from Judy Anderson. She asks, would you be able to partner with Cornell or another research entity to document biodiversity over time, as well as soil health enhancement and sequestration?
Yeah, great question. So we're developing our plan right now. Right now we're working with biologists. We have a biologist in the UK, and we have an educational person in the UK. We have a biologist here in New York and an educational person here in New York. The plan is ultimately to bring graduate students in to help with the ongoing monitoring and reporting to these projects. We've been able to standardize all of our data reporting, so we'll be able to amass all of this great data from all of our sites across the world. And yes, there is a plan to work with a research university, but we haven't inked anything with anyone quite yet. If you have some ideas, we're all ears. Talk with UMass, SUNY ESF. We have some contacts at Cornell as well. So we're just kind of getting through some of the basics right now before we start reaching out to universities. Thank you.
Great. Another question by Eric Johnson asked. He asked, what national grid substation will this project feed into?
This goes into the Valkin substation. V-A-L-K-I-N.
And Gary Roberts asks, what type of batteries are used for the project?
This is one of my favorite topics. The batteries as they're currently spec'd are lithium sulfate, lithium ion, and they sit in 53-foot containers, which have HVAC and fire detection, suppression, monitoring systems. They're not accessible to people, and they sit in the field on a pad next to the rest of the power electronics. So they're isolated out there in the middle of the fenced array, or in this case, on the edge of it. So that's what we're using. It's I can go into more detail, but maybe not right now. If you have questions, I've gone down this rabbit hole before, if you'll believe it. But if you have further questions, I'm happy to go through it with you offline.
Great. Are there any other questions, comments?
And thanks for all the other comments here. Yeah, we're glad to focus on pollinators, and it does look like a good site. It's tucked away.
Sorry, I think there's another question in there from.
Oh, did I miss it?
Between Judy and Gary Roberts. Have you seen that one?
I just saw one from David Michaels. He asks, could you elaborate on the process and commitment for technology maintenance upgrades as solar technologies evolve?
Yeah, I'll pick up on that one. Sure. On Gillian, if that's okay. Right. So, I guess a really good question. And these projects is for the first 25 years, you know, the panels that we put in are going to be long to an incentive, and it's probably not going to make sense to do until end of 25 years. If you look at what's happened in the last 20 years, what we've seen is, you know, just to give you a good example, when I started working in 2010 in the UK, you know, a solar module, a solar panel was 180 watts in a panel. And, you know, all these products at
your panel.
I think we're...
Giovanni, you're breaking up quite a bit.
Yeah, am I? Sorry.
Do you mind if I just jump in? Do you want to turn off your video? Maybe it'll work better.
Is that any better?
It is, yes. Carry on.
So I think what you're likely to see is that when, you know, by the time we get to year 25, I think it's very likely that these panels are going to be more efficient and have more wattage in them. So I think what will start to happen is you'll start to see an improved footprint. You'll have less panels, less area, and generating the same 5 megawatts of solar power onto the distribution. And we'll probably have a more efficient and better battery storage over those time frame. The nice thing about the storage stuff, though, is you can piece that stuff in, because at the moment there isn't an incentive that locks us into the equipment. So when it makes more economic sense, they could be swapped out at any time during those 25 years. But the idea is, you know, I expect this is going to be a long-term transition to go from, you know, brown fossil fuel led energy to more renewable generation. And I think you'll see all these parks just becoming repowered and becoming more efficient and being able to generate more electricity for longer periods of the day as we move into more battery storage and higher outputs of the panels.
Yep.
Great. Okay,
Yeah, let me hit this one question from Joe. It says you're going to grab that? Yeah, I'll let you grab it because Gillian will be good at answering it.
Sure. If I'm an Eden customer, is the price of the electricity the same as National Grid or different?
Oh, I'm good at that one, huh? All right. So the price of electricity is the same with National Grid. We don't affect the price that you pay National Grid, right? Or the value of that supply and delivered kilowatt hour. What we do is offer the billing credit. So National Grid will subtract the dollar value from your bill, and you pay the solar farm 90 cents on the dollar for that billing credit or those billing credits. Does that answer your question, Joe?
Okay. We have another question from Judy. How many acres are fenced? What happens to the rest of the property? And is your lease only on the area fence?
Great question, Judy. So inside the fence is about 35 acres, somewhere 32 to 35 acres. We lease only about, say, a foot or two outside of the perimeter fence. So it's, our lease is focused on that one site. In certain cases, we'll buy the property and build the system, but inevitably the project gets leased back. So in this case, 35 acres and just the lease area for us, and easements for the access road and the plantings, et cetera.
Great. Looks like Suzanne has another question. I'm going to allow you to talk. You may need to unmute yourself, Suzanne.
Yes, I'm interested in where we stand with the town of Skodak, how that will work. Will they be announcing a planning meeting? Will the project be announced by you? Will you contact us? Is this how does this work, and when do you anticipate that happening?
Okay. So there will be announcements for the public hearing. We're typically in front of the planning board regularly. So the best way to check in is to go to their website and look for the agenda for the planning board meeting, or a zoning board, or a town board. And you can find whether we're on the agenda for that particular evening's meeting. Kinderhook likewise. For the public hearing, we have to, there's some publication of the public hearing, notice of public hearing that goes out. So people will typically find out about it that way. You know, if you're interested, you can drop us a line and we'll let you know. You know, part of what we're doing now is to say hi to folks, so we don't just pop up in a public hearing and, oh, surprise, we're building a solar farm. If that's something you're interested in, Suzanne, we can certainly let you know.
And I think the other thing we do is we create a newsletter, and as public hearings come up, if you're on our email list, you get a copy of that newsletter, and it'll inform you of public hearings. We do help a bit on that. So,
cool.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Any other questions? Great. If there are no other questions, we can conclude our virtual open house. Thank you once again for joining us this evening. Again, if you could take a moment to complete the feedback form as soon as you log out of the Zoom, we really want to know what you think. That would be greatly appreciated. And like what Gillian said, if you have any other questions or comments that pop up after today, you can always reach out to us using any of the contact methods you see on the screen.
Great.
That's it.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. Good night. Be well.